My next guests are Chef David Sundberg and Brewer James Warren of Blue Corn Brewery on Rodeo Road across from the mall. They're having an event this Thursday called the Defrost Fest. And if we get any more snow, it definitely will be defrosting. It's at 6 p.m. at the brewery, and it's going to feature cask ale from Blue Corn, Chama River Brewery, Second Street Brewery, Duel, Santa Fe Brewing Company, all the local brewing companies. And so there's going to be food and fabulous beer, and you have to make reservations for this one. So I'm going to tell you the number right now, 438-1800. Is it weird, you guys, to talk about beer at 8 a.m. in the morning?
I don't think it's ever inappropriate to talk about beer.
I have to admit, I mean, I drink beer occasionally, but I don't know anything about beer, and I don't know what cask beer is.
That's great. We're here to educate.
Okay.
So, yeah, cask beer is a beer that goes through a secondary fermentation in the serving vessel. So instead of being pushed out of a keg with CO2, it's actually gravity-fed. We'll actually get a big hammer, and we'll put in a tap into the side of the cask, and it just feeds out, and it gets the natural carbonation. And for craft brewers, it allows us to sometimes do some fun things. Like, we're doing a brown ale that's got pinon, nuts, and coffee in it. So it allows us to add some secondary flavors and have a little bit of fun with the beer.
Why does it allow you to add secondary flavors?
When we fill up the cask, there's a big enough port in there that will allow us to add those things. And sometimes we can add extra hops to our IPAs. We can add coffee. We've done chocolate. Anything you can think of, you know, have some fun, experiment on a smaller scale than we could normally do.
And James, is cask beer an old-fashioned way of making beer?
It is. It's a very traditional English way. And cask, it really just, to them, means a container. So anything they could find. It used to be wooden, now they're metal.
It's kind of that classic old picture that you see of the old bartenders in their white coats and the English bars pouring out a pint for people. And it really is just a gorgeous thing because you get the representation. There's exactly what the brewer intended. So when we normally drink beer in America, we drink it far too cold and way too carbonated. So it just really kills the palate. Carbon dioxide is very acidic, and then cold really chills your taste buds. So it reduces the amount of flavors that you get. By drinking the cask beer, you actually get it at cellar temperature, which is much warmer, and by having it under its own natural fermentation rather than pumping in extra carbon dioxide in order to kind of push the beer through taps, which is normally what happens, you just get a much richer, fuller flavor of the beers.
So it's sort of like warm Coke out of a bottle as opposed to...
Yeah, I suppose you can make that reference, except I don't think anybody really likes drinking warm Coke, but...
So normally at Blue Corn, like, how many different kinds of beer do you make? How does that work?
We have 6 year-round beers that are house beers that are on all the time. We have 4 other lines that we get to experiment with, have fun, that change seasonally. Could be whatever falls out of our heads, or, you know, there's a time for Oktoberfest beers and Irish Reds and some traditional time frames for those. But a lot of times... we just get to have fun and explore the history of beer and really look back and pull some things out of the books and see what happens.
And you guys, Blue Corn doesn't sell its beer outside of the restaurants, does it?
We do. Yeah, certainly we do keg sales out the back door, but we don't bottle.
That's, I guess, my question.
Yep,
no bottle.
Uh-huh. Exactly. That's something we certainly would look forward to in the future. But right now, James has trouble keeping up with production because there's just a huge beer crowd in New Mexico and it's growing. And so... keeping up on a day-to-day basis.
And we serve a little bit of our beer at the draft stations, one in Albuquerque and one here in Santa Fe. But mostly it's just served right out of our brewery.
Uh-huh. So that's why all those cars fill that parking lot. It's the beer thing. So, David, tell me a little about what you guys are going to do food-wise. I was wondering about this, and you actually used the word pairing. Like, we pair cheese with wine.
Exactly.
You pair food with beer.
Exactly. This is something that I fell in love with right after college. I got a job at Free State Brewing in Kansas and really started learning about craft beer. And this was early on when craft beer was just starting to kind of create a niche. Now it's exploded. And one of the great things about beer is that it's really versatile, more versatile than wine, in my opinion. And actually, there are a lot of master sommeliers who will challenge beer masters in pairing competitions.
Oh.
And the beers win a lot of times. because the nuance of flavors, it's more friendly towards food. A lot of wines can be too acidic, or they can be too juicy, and they either mask foods or they don't complement them terribly well. Whereas beers, we can really have a vast array of things that just complement or even contrast a lot of different food flavors. Normally when James and I work together, we do an event, I either ask him, you know, what beer is coming up, and I specifically pair foods that'll go exactly with that beer, or if I have, you know, a seasonal thing coming up, or if there's something exciting coming out of the farmer's market, I'll create the entire menu and then challenge James to match the beers to the foods. It's just a really fun endeavor for the two of us. It kind of keeps us on our toes and really lets us stretch our kind of culinary and tasting legs a little bit. With this event, because with casks, the brewers don't know what they're going to make until really pretty much right before it, because since it's a secondary fermentation, they have to wait to see what they're going to be brewing. So when they find out what they're going to be brewing, they pull some of that beer out, create the secondary fermentation, and oftentimes it's only 5 days before that they put these into the casks. So with that, I wanted to make foods that were beer-centric, basically putting beer into the foods and just making the beer friendly, as opposed to trying to pair up with beers that have no idea what's going to be there until just a short time before. So I just had a load of fun thinking about what would be great foods to just stand around and nosh on, drink some beers, have a great some conversation with people, and really put some beer into the food in different kinds of ways.
So what are you making?
I have some pretty fun things. So I love making sausages, and I love working with local food. So I got some local venison from Colorado and made some game sausage. I'm going to do some local pork in with that sausage and then bake it into kind of canapé and some buttermilk biscuit dough. And then, of course, I like working with beer, so I'm going to caramelize some onions with the honey wheat, which is kind of a lighter, sweeter beer, and then do some grilled pizzas. James gets in this, it's a spray malt, so it's almost like if you think the center of a malted milk ball, and it has that texture and flavor, and I'm going to stuff that into some mushrooms with some vegetables and herbs and such. And then I got Talus Wynn down at Galisteo, has just fabulous lamb. I absolutely love it. So I'm going to do some shepherd's pie and do it stuffed into some potato skins, which I figure it's football time, everybody's kind of has, you know, that type of food in mind. And then a few years ago, I created a recipe using our oatmeal stout for doing basically a classic fish and chip, but with oatmeal stout instead of a light amber ale. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do some basically skewers, so fish on a stick.
Does it come out darker in color?
It does, a little bit. Not terribly, but you really get that kind of darker, roastier oatmeal flavor, so it's pretty intriguing. And then I always like to do a sweet treat, because a lot of people really get surprised how well beer goes with dessert. And so I'm going to do a creme brulee with some malt in it.
Wow, a creme brulee with malt in it.
It'll be pretty fun, actually.
And then you're going to tell us which beer we're supposed to drink with that, right?
Not really. I think it's going to be up to people to kind of cross the lines and taste for themselves. And we really want to create some conversation in terms of what people think, you know, what their palates are responding to, what they like, what they dislike about the different combinations of food.
And, you know, we were talking about craft beer, and I'm probably the only person in North America that doesn't really know what that means. But how do you differentiate craft beer from the other beer?
Great question.
James?
I always like to think it's a more hands-on process. We're working in every step of the way. There's just two people who run our brewery back there. So when I think of craft beer, I think even some of the bigger guys out there are still craft beer to me. They're still innovating. They're trying new things. They're getting out there. They're producing great products. We learn a lot from the big guys.
It's a scale thing. Like, it's not a big factory.
Yeah, I don't like to put a barrelage number on craft beer, on how many barrels they put out, to define whether it's a craft brewery or not. I just like to see that they're hands-on and they're still trying to innovate what they're doing. They're still being creative. They're not caught making one thing.
What's the beer capital of the United States in terms of craft beer? Which city, if somebody gave you $5,000 and said go touring and go to the best craft beer places, where would you go?
Well, that's what's nice about beer is with $5,000 you can hit all the cities. But whereas with wine you might hit just a few chateaus.
That's right.
Denver would be a great place, and also Portland, Oregon.
Yeah. And oddly enough, I mean, not necessarily one city, but Vermont is a mecca for craft brewing.
It's because it's so cold there.
I'm with you on that
one. They have nothing to do, so they're all inside.
Deer and skiing go great together.
Figuring how to make beer. Well, you know, in a way, beer has always been sort of like the blue-collar drink, right? And and you drink wine if you're, you know, upper class, and you know all about wine, and you have your wine, you know, your own, God, I can't even think of the word, cellar. You have a wine cellar at home and all that. But that's not necessarily true anymore, is it?
Fortunately, that attitude is really changing. It's coming from a different echelon, because like you said, when wine really hit the scene back, especially in the 70s, it was a highbrow thing. Mm-hmm. Only the wealthiest of people could afford it because it was expensive to import after Prohibition. There wasn't a whole lot of wineries in the United States. They were starting to grow up again. Whereas beer was always, blue-collar drink. So the revolution of craft beer has really come from a grassroots level, from people who, you know, appreciate good quality stuff, but they don't want to spend a mint on something. It's intriguing, though, that beer is really has an older history. So if we were to go to Europe, it wouldn't be considered like that. It's not a blue-collar thing. It's something that everybody enjoys. My wife and I actually like to say it's like groceries. It belongs on the table.
Yeah, right.
It's not something that you make a special occasion to go and do. It just needs to be there because it's part of your meal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been to some places in Germany, some, you know, ancient wine houses, these old, you know, buildings and stuff, and it's just a part of the culture. Of course. So I want to know you guys' backgrounds, how you got into this business. David, go first.
Sure. I started cooking. I'll make it sort of brief. I started cooking.
He's 91, so it's going to take him a while to explain.
I started cooking on my mom's counter. I just fell in love with food because my mom was really passionate about it, and she's a great cook, and she's listening this morning, so hi, Mom. And when I was in college, I was just kind of lost. I went through a bunch of different majors and ended up just thinking about what I like doing and realized, wow, I could actually get a job doing something that I like. And so I basically did a lot of traveling. I worked in Europe, did some traveling through Mexico, traveled throughout the United States and doing different internships and different restaurants, and just loved it ever since. So I've been doing it for a little over 20 years. And
how long have you been in Santa Fe?
Coming up 5 years.
And did you come here for this job?
I didn't, know. My wife and I actually were living in Rhode Island, and we got tired of the gray winters. And we fell in love with New Mexico, got married out here, and well, we were living in New England, and just couldn't take it anymore. We were out here in February 1 year, and it was cold but beautiful, sunny, and we were sitting and having a margarita in the airport and looked at each other and said, you want to move there? Yeah, let's move there. So we quit our jobs, and we're here in the next month, and just moved out with no prospects, and and just fell into some good luck.
That's great. You know, and have you been at Blue Corn all that time?
Most of it, actually. Mm-hmm. I worked for stints up at Buffalo Thunder as well as up at Encantado.
Mm-hmm.
And then got offered the chef position at Blue Corn, and that's where a lot of my roots are. We're really in the craft beer industry and creating fun food, but for more people as opposed to trying to do very high-end cuisine.
Yeah. Do you work days or nights or both?
Yes.
Yes. I was going to say, don't you have a little baby or a child at home?
I do. I have an 8-month-old.
Wow. Are you getting any sleep?
Actually, she's doing great right now. So, knock, knock.
Yeah, that could be tough. Now, James, tell us about your background. I have to say, babe, I have to tell them this. Okay. So, I'm sitting here in the previous segment of the show, and this young guy in a stocking cap comes over and says, hi. And I'm like, okay, hi. A lot of people here, you know, come over in the cafe and say just hi. And he kind of blushed and he said, I'm one of your next guests. And, of course, the reason is he looks so young.
Yep.
I was like, well, how old are you, kid, you know? Sorry, Jay.
We'll be 1 year older
drink
tomorrow.
The beer, you just can make it, yeah.
You'll be 1 year older tomorrow? It's your birthday tomorrow?
It is.
Wow, happy birthday. How old will you be?
29.
He is young. See? Yeah, but not quite as young as I thought you were. So tell us how you came to be a brewer.
So I was originally an art major in college, and I thought I wanted to teach art. And so I finished my degree and got my teaching certification, just to realize there aren't a whole lot of jobs out there for art teachers, especially in Texas at the time where I was. And so after a while of searching and substitute teaching, I decided to make some changes, and I moved to Connecticut. From there, Connecticut also wouldn't take my teaching license. But while I was there, I went on a brewery tour. I had never really been in a brewery at all, or only drank a little bit of craft beer, and I just fell in love with it. It was science, it was art, it was cooking, it was everything. And I heard they needed some help on their packaging line, and I said, I can do that.
Wow.
So I spent hundreds of hours behind the canning line, sweeping floors, doing whatever they needed, and helping out with another brew pub in town, part-time also, and eventually a full-time job opened with the brewery, and I hopped on it, and I never looked back. The New England Brewing Company there helped me go to brewing school, get my brewing degree, and had a lot of great time working with them in the brew pub there. And eventually I realized Connecticut wasn't the environment for me, and started looking around, and I'd spent some time in New Mexico growing up in the summers, and I started looking in the Southwest, and I got lucky enough to find a really great job here in town working for Blue Corn, and I have to thank them for taking a risk on a young kid like me to come take over their brewery.
They interviewed you by phone, didn't they?
They did.
Yeah, if they'd seen you, they would have gone, wait, are you sure you're old enough to drink beer? I'm sorry, James, I'm giving you a hard time. But,
oh, no.
You know, the previous segment, we were talking about a film that's out now about the feminist movement. And so I have to ask you, how many women brewers are there out there?
More than you'd think.
There's at least two in this state.
Yeah, and there's Pink Boot Society is a women's brewing association.
Pink Boot Society, I like that.
Yeah, because all the brewers wear boots because they slog through the malts and everything that spill over. And and so it's really interesting because you never think that 10 years ago we'd be where we are today in the brewing industry. It's the glass ceiling really doesn't exist because it's a more open community. It didn't used to be, certainly. It was just considered, this is a man's world at beer, right?
I see. Yeah.
And now it's so accepting because it isn't this highbrow thing. It's something that everybody can enter into. If you have a palate and you have a passion, you're welcome.
And it's younger men who are starting these, in large part, these craft breweries and things like that, I think.
And women, yeah.
Yeah, and so the younger men are more open to other women, probably, than, you know, the 70-year-old. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't be maligning 70-year-old men, but, you know, the older generations have a tendency to be somewhat more sexist,
And set in their ways.
Set in their ways. So tell me about, how did you come up with the idea of this event? Because you're inviting all the other brewers to come to your place.
Absolutely. Actually, this is the second year we've done the Defrost Fest. Mm-hmm. Last year what we did was we invited all the breweries to bring a beer and actually participate, and I paired foods with every beer that people were bringing in. That was really difficult because trying to set a brewery schedule is hurting cats. and trying to do it with six different brewers was really a big challenge. It was loads of fun. But with this year, it was a better challenge because we just got to welcome the brewers and say, do whatever you want. It doesn't matter. We'd just love to have you here in our house and host the other beers. One thing that's really nice, and it's interesting because in this community, Santa Fe's small, and New Mexico is fairly small in terms of the community size. And so the brewers really get along great. And you'd think that there's this massive competition and everybody's at each other's throats because, oh, we want us to be the best. We all of us want everybody to be the best. So it's just a really nice, friendly thing when we can call up the other brewers and say, hey, we want to host a festival at our place and bring some beer in, and let's all just get together and talk about beer and have a good time. And it's just much more of a community than you expect. So basically, we just started calling around, and when we came up with the idea of doing the casks, it was because with the winter time, it's a fairly traditional time when it's cooler weather to do casks because the natural air temperature facilitates good fermentation rates. Does that sound appropriate?
Yeah, absolutely.
As opposed to in the summertime, it can be really hot temperatures, and the yeast can just go absolutely crazy and put off some strange flavors.
Oh.
And so it's appropriate to do casks in the wintertime. It also allows the brewers to do darker beers, a little richer flavors and some more interesting things, as opposed to in the summertime, everybody might just want to drink light lagers and pilsners and pale ales and such, where there wouldn't be as much nuance in them.
Uh-huh. So, James, what is your favorite beer that you drink? Do you have a favorite?
I get this question a lot, and I found out the only way I can really answer it If you open up my refrigerator, the most often times the beer you'll find is a Scotch Ale from Oscar Blues Brewing Company in Colorado. And I've always enjoyed the more maltier beers, the sweeter beers. But yeah, Old Chub from Oscar Blues is definitely one of my favorites. So that's why I love making our oatmeal stout and our brown ale here. They're my kind of beer.
Similar to that one. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I always tease them because I'm into lighter, crisper beers. I like lagers and pilsners and American pale ales. And so James really is into brewing rich beers, high alcohol content, very malty, strong. And I want half of one of your beers and then bring me something light that I can just sit and drink a few of them.
Yeah, well, you know, and I don't know if this is just because I'm a woman, but when I order a beer in a place that's a brewery, you know, a lot of the time you get this gigantic thing. It's like I want to say, like, could I have, like, half that much?
Yep. And actually, in most breweries you can. Oh. You just need to ask because generally breweries want you to taste as many of the beers as you're able to. We pour off 4-ounce beers, 10-ounce beers, 16-ounce beers, and 22s. So there's certainly, you know, a variety of what you can choose. And a lot of people come in and they just have samples, so they can have several 4-ounce beers and just do a tasting of them.
22-ounce beer, I'd be sleeping at the restaurant.
I'm with
okay.
you, man. Yeah.
But when you drink your own beers, what do you like the best? In the restaurant, surely when you close down occasionally, you drink a beer, right?
I've always been a preference of the smaller glasses. It maintains the temperature we're looking for longer. So you got a 22-ounce glass, it tends to get pretty warm by the time, at least at the rate that I drink, by the time you get to the bottom.
Yeah, but which kind of beer do you drink?
Oh, I usually drink whatever the newest special is, you know, whatever we put out. Though, I try to go through all the house beers through every batch, you know, make sure we have consistency in our product. But I'm usually excited about whatever the newest specialty beer we put out.
Do you have one beer that you brew all the time that is the most popular with your customers?
Oh, absolutely. It's the Roadrunner IPA.
Do you think it's just because it has a cute name?
IPA, after seasonals, is the highest selling market and craft beer. People love their hops. They love their bitter beers.
What's IPA mean? Some people out there don't know.
Sure. India Pale Ale.
Oh, right. India
so Pale. It was named because when the English were out exploring, you know, they'd give their rations to their sailors and everything like that. When they would put their beer in barrels and then ship it all the way over to wherever it was they were going, a lot of times it would spoil. Oh. And they realized that if they threw a handful of hops, which are bittering agents and flavoring agents, it would preserve the beer. So hops are natural preservatives. And so what they would do is before they sealed up the barrels of beer, before they popped them off to India, they would throw a handful of hops on the top of it. And by the time it got there, the flavor of the hops would really infuse into the beer. And the Englishmen really started getting used to that flavor profile. So when they came back to England from their explorations, they couldn't find it, because that was only exported. So then they started making the India Pale Ale.
Wow, you guys know a lot about beer. That's just amazing.
It's a great history. There's so much fun to beer. And what I love about it is there's so much culture just infused into the beer, the history of beer and the current culture of beer. There's so many different varieties of beer from around the world, and one thing that's amazing about the culture in the United States is that we've really indoctrinated and accepted all those different styles. How many styles are there in the Brewers Association or the Guild?
The style guidelines, I think there's about closing in on 90 different styles of beer, though there's more growing every day as people experiment.
It's just category is the way it's categorized. Mm-hmm. Beer is regional, isn't it? How people drink beer, what they drink.
In the United States, I don't think it's quite as much as it is worldwide.
Hmm. Yeah, there's still some differences here in the U.S. If you have a West Coast IPA versus an East Coast IPA, they will be different. East Coast is more dealing more with aromatics and how the beer smells, and it's not quite as bitter. On this side of the U.S., we go bitter.
We go bitter.
Yeah.
I wonder why that is. Maybe it is related to the food that we eat. You know,
that's a great point, actually. One thing that's fabulous about New Mexico is we have chili, just magical ingredient. It is great with beer, and likewise, beer is great with it. One thing that's really neat about hops is that very hoppy beers actually accentuate the chili. It makes them spicier. One thing about IPAs that we tend to brew, they're also maltier beers, so it'll ramp up the chili flavor, but because of that maltiness, the sweetness, the backbone of the beer, it calms down the chili afterwards, so you're just ready to kind of keep diving into the plate.
Yeah, I don't know. What do you think they drink in Detroit? I just have this vision of everybody drinking really dark beers. You know?
I don't know. There's some great breweries in Detroit, and there's a wide variety of things that they brew there. So I think it just depends on the personal palate. But yeah, IPAs certainly nationally are one of the big sellers.
Okay, last question. We're getting ready to check out here. Super Bowl coming up. If you could have one beer for your friends at home, what would it be?
Oh, wow.
Oh, what we make? Probably the Atomic Blonde Lager. It just seems like good football beer to me.
See, and I'm going with the Oatmeal Stout.
Okay.
There's a rival.
Everybody's palate.
Thanks so much for being with me this morning on the Radio Cafe. Chef David Sundberg and brewer James Warren from the Blue Corn Brewery on Rodeo Road. They're having a big event Thursday night, the Defrost Fest. Call 438-1800 if you want to make reservations.